Call the meeting to order for Environment and Natural Resources Committee, March 12, 2007. Has everyone had a chance to look over the minutes for March 8th? Anybody want to move those minutes?
I move approval of the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Breinart moves adoption of the minutes for March 8th. 2007. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. We are going to be moving the division, some division reports today from Representative David Dills, Game Fish and Forestry Division. What we're going to do is to move these the division report to get all the bills before us or adoption of the division reports. And then we are going to, again, individually move each bill to their separate destination. We did this once before. There was no opposition to doing it in this way. So, Representative Dill, would you want to move the division reports?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the division reports from the Game Fish and Forestry Division. These are miscellaneous bills that we've heard over the course of the session so far. And I'll make that motion. You want me to give a brief explanation of the bill?
I think that'd be, you wouldn't have to do that because we are going to be going through each one individually, so that would be fine. So Representative Dill moves adoption of the division reports for House Files 278631, 1016, 1183, 1035, 904, and 632. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yeah. Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. Division reports have been adopted. They are now before us. So we will now take up each bill separately, send them on to their next destination. First on the agenda, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move House File 278 to pass as recommended. And which committee would it go to?
It would be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Members, this bill was talked about in the division, and you probably have seen some of the press that's been on this in the papers or on the radio. What this does is it institutes a program like what is occurring in Wisconsin and Iowa for the goal here is to take more deer and then to use the meat to feed the hungry. I do have an author's amendment that I'd like to move to get the bill in the shape that I'd like it. In the division, we had concerns, DNR and the Department of Ag, and I have worked with both agencies to clearly delineate how the money is transferred so that we protect the federal Pittman-Robertson dollar authority. So I'd like to move the AO70114 amendment to get the bill in shape I'd like.
Yes, so Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, when a bill has been engrossed, it's appropriate for us to listen to the amendment and then vote on it, not just to incorporate it in the way the author wants, because the bill has already been through a committee.
And we will be voting on the amendment.
Okay.
So,
and for an explanation of the amendment?
We certainly can, Representative Hansen.
Chair Eakin and Representative Osment, I do have folks from the DNR and from agriculture that are here. If they would want to speak on this, Mr. Boggs.
Welcome, Mr. Boggs. If you could state your name, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Ed Boggs, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for DNR. We had expressed some concern in the bill language as it was passed in the division, but at that time we hadn't had a chance to work through the appropriate language to fix that. The primary concern was just that the language in the bill is before you appropriate money directly to the from the Game and Fish Fund directly to the Commissioner of Agriculture, and we have the federal Pittman-Robertson law that Representative Hansen referred to that's designed, and plus we have assent language in state law that's designed to assure that licensee dollars are under the control of the State Fish and Wildlife Agency and are used to support fish and wildlife management purposes. So the language in the amendment, I'm going to reference the language starting on line 1.22, where it would make it clear that the surcharge money in this bill is appropriated to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for deer management, including grants or payments to agencies, organizations, or individuals for assisting with the cost of processing deer taken for population management purposes for venison donation programs. With that language, we feel that we're going to be within the federal laws on assuring that use of license dollars are under the control of the State Fish and Wildlife Agency, and that these deer being processed for donation are clearly deer that are being taken for management purposes. The remainder of this is moving some language from Chapter 97B to Chapter 17, and I'll let Mr. Elfring talk about those portions.
Mr. Elfring?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Kevin Elfring, and I'm the Director of the Dairy and Food Inspection Division for the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, what this really does is it more clearly defines how these products will be distributed, and that the food shelves will be registering with the Department of Agriculture as well as a meat processor. We've had a program in place that where we have allowed meat processors to donate venison in the past, and it just is going to fall in line more with our policies so that we have particular individual plants register with us, not just have any meat processor out there to be able to produce product, that we would want to make sure that we're even conducting additional inspections, and so that the processors know the responsibilities that they have for further donation to the public. The other thing is it just clearly defines that the charitable organization also has to submit quarterly reports so that we have an idea of how much product has actually been distributed, and then we'll be able to have a method of auditing to make sure that the funds are being equitably distributed.
Thank you, Mr. Elfring. Mr. Bogus, for the explanation. Any other questions on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Hansen renews his motion that the A070114 amendment be passed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, the bill sets up a program where on each license there would be a $1 surcharge that would go into the funds that are established and described in the amendment, transferred to the Department of Agriculture. There would be participating meat lockers that deer hunters could drop off the deer at, and then they would work with the Department of Agriculture and be reimbursed for that deer. I believe that you have in your packet two emails from folks about the program. I know that there are questions about funding of this. I think that most folks agree with the idea. I would ask that folks consider passing this and moving it on to the next step. I believe that the program has worked in Iowa and Wisconsin. I believe that this is a game management program that has that we need in Minnesota. We've heard testimony in committee after committee about overpopulation of deer, and so I think this is a good step to help manage the deer population.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, I think we know this is probably going to pass today, and you and I are together on most things, and I agree with you that this is well-intentioned. I just don't like the idea of putting a dollar surcharge on the deer hunting license, in effect taxing deer hunters for a program that I think should be voluntary. And I don't like the idea that we can go to our 500,000 deer hunters in the state anytime we need an extra $500,000 and levy them for a tax increase. And there's not a lot that's going to happen to stop it. I think the program is a good idea, but I'd like to see it be voluntary, and I would urge members to vote no on this.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, and I guess I could echo all the same thoughts of what Representative Hansen and I are usually on the same page, but I am emphatically against this. I think not only for the reasons of the deer hunters doing a social program, which is one argument, I think this is going to start to get on the edge of the ethics of hunting. One of our responsibilities as hunters is to think about what we're going to be doing with the game we take. And this is now, I mean, folks, there are areas where you can have 5 permits to shoot antlerless deer. You have the opportunity for somebody to go and really do some things that are unethical, as far as I'm concerned, with hunting, no longer having the responsibility to deal with the meat, preserving it in a proper way, and to care about it. This is going down the wrong direction. We as a state have been very careful to make sure that we are ethical in this very important tradition that we have. And President Hansen, we're encouraging folks to go out. Currently, you can get, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Bogus, you can get 5 permits for antlerless deer in some areas. You could easily have an opportunity where 5 antlerless deer would come by and you'd go bang, 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 bang. And unfortunately, you would be throwing them in the back of a pickup, not worried about them. This is going down the wrong road, I absolutely believe. And I understand why the deer hunters as an association are opposed to it.
Any other questions? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. If I could ask the author a question or make a comment. It's not true that all deer hunters are opposed. In fact, some are enthusiastically in support because they've seen what has happened in other states like Iowa and Wisconsin. And they have seen not only the goodwill, but the emphasis has been on what has happened to the herd and the management of the herd. We have had testimony, Representative Hansen, in committees about how much damage is done in our forests and how we have to cap trees and the cost of that because our deer herd has gotten too big. We hear that from our suburban colleagues all the time. And so I think maybe one of the things we have to watch out for is we've chosen to use language about social programs when indeed the real benefit is going to be to the rest of the taxpayers in the state because of our huge herd and to the goodwill of deer hunters, which now, having read some of the articles in the paper, I don't think is there anymore. Representative Hansen, would you help us with some of the numbers?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, there are about 450,000 licensed deer hunters or deer licenses issued each year by the DNR. There is disagreement among groups that are representing deer hunters. I think it would be important for the committee to ask those organizations, if possible, how many members they represent. Secondly, we have heard in testimony in other committees that we're spending about, I believe in the DNR, correct me if I'm wrong on this, about $100,000 right now relating to culling deer in northwestern Minnesota. And I believe it was $500,000 per year, I may be wrong on that, on capping buds on white pine plantations. And those are things that the taxpayers are supporting. So I think it's important to look at this in the whole context of deer management. And we have too many deer.
Any other questions? Representative Cornish has a question.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the unfortunate thing about an increasing deer population is we start getting so inventive on ways to kill them. We want to put scopes on muzzleloaders. We want to use crossbows. We want to use real rifle powder instead of black powder. Also, we can be more efficient and kill more deer, and we forget about the ethics part of it. There's also other states that have really great lots or a multitude of hunters that want to use dogs to chase deer. There's states that want to use two-way radios to take deer, all under the guise of overpopulation. And so at some point, we've got to start thinking about ethics instead of just the population. If we do it by depredation, then we should start killing timber wolves very soon, because they're hurting the farmers and the income, taking a lot of sheep and a lot of cattle and a lot of deer. And if we want to even stop, but we're so quick to protect the wolves and hold that in high regard, but yet we're so easy giving up on the deer. And it's kind of aggravating when you, all of our laws, we want to take more and take more and take more. There's other states that allow electronic shocking of fish and trot lines for fish, and there's a lot of things that other states do that we don't do, and I think we should be somewhat proud of that. And I said most of the stuff I did about the bill the other day, so I won't belabor that issue, but I just really have a problem with adding a dollar onto the license for a social program. I just wish we could do it through Human Services bill there, so thanks.
Representative Osmond had a question.
Thanks, Sharon. To the author of the bill, is there anything in this bill that increases the number of deer that a hunter can take?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, no.
But, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm confused as to when we're talking about an alternative way of maybe handling the venison instead of having it being put in freezers and ending up with a bunch of freezer burn and people throwing it out so they get room for next year's venison. It seems to me that this does provide for it to be handled in an ethical fashion and doesn't allow for hunters to go out and take more deer than what they can already get. If you have a problem with the number of deer that are being taken, we do that through limits. This bill doesn't have anything to do with that. I not that I'm unsympathetic to some of the arguments that have been made, but I think we need to stay on what the bill is about.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond. I think, you know, if we didn't have the experience in the surrounding states, there may be a way to look at it that way. However, you know, the two surrounding states, both Iowa and Wisconsin, who have demonstrated, and they actually have seen more licenses occur with this program. Over Iowa's been going for 4 years. In Wisconsin, I believe it's 3 years, and they actually have a $2 surcharge on every license. That more people will get the license and more deer will be taken because they have a place to go with the deer.
Representative Dale has a question.
A question for Mr. Kelleher. I see he's up there. He hasn't spoken yet. What happened to the money for the deer feeding? Was that ever removed from the there was a surcharge of some nature that was put on the license, and was that eventually incorporated in the cost of the license, or was that taken away and so the license was eventually reduced by that amount? I don't remember that.
Mr. Kelleher, if you could state your name.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, good morning, members of the committee. My name is Tom Kelleher. I represent the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. And to answer Representative Chief Luginius' question, too, we have about 20,000 members and 68 chapters statewide. To Representative Dill's question, it wasn't really a line item surcharge. It was incorporated into the license fee and is still there and is used for both deer feeding and chronic wasting disease management. And I think it was 50 cents, or might have been a full dollar.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I just have a comment on the bill. You know, it passed out of our committee, and there was certainly votes in both the affirmative and the negative. And, you know, we've been around the table talking about not agreeing, but usually agreeing, Representative Hoppe, Representative McNamara. But I, for one, don't deer hunt anymore because I far prefer a cow or a pig over a deer. And now, I mean, I feel like I would probably buy a license because I know that for a dollar, one extra dollar, that I could do the responsible thing, because the last deer that I shot, I paid $60 to process it. Then I put it in my freezer. And then the next season when I went to buy another deer license and I opened the freezer, I noticed there was none of the deer had been consumed and all of it was freezer burnt. And I thought, this doesn't really make much sense. So I go duck hunting that opening weekend of deer season, where in my instance, and I'm just an individual. Also, Bill Hurst, you know, I heard that there is 450,000 or thereabouts deer hunting permits that are issued in the state, your 20,000 membership is certainly significant, but it's a very small fraction of the deer hunters that actually deer hunt. And I just think that there's some room for consideration of this bill and to go ahead with it forward. Whether it actually becomes law and we actually do it, I think that's still a debate. But I think there are things on both sides of the issue. And also to represent McNamara's point about the bang-bang five times, I would be interested in hearing from Winchester and Federal and Remington of what the average number of shots spent in Minnesota are to take a deer. And I know waterfowl is up around 7 or 8 or maybe even as high as 10 for one duck. You have to be a damn good hunter to get your five deer with five shots out of the same herd. So, I mean, those are all kind of tussles that we have to wrestle with here. And so I'm going to support the bill because I know there are others that don't, and it'll probably be a genuine debate in conference committee if it makes it that far.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you. Mr. Keller.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, to your comments about the ratio of numbers of my organization versus all the hunters in the state, we are the largest conservation office, conservation group. We had our corporate board meeting in Mankato this year in late February. As I said, we had 68 chapters represented by the president of each of those chapters. They voted unanimously to oppose the dollar surcharge. I don't know how statistically valid that is in regards to the rest of the hunting community. I know that Representative Hansen's been working with a group from southern Minnesota that fully supports the dollar surcharge. And I think from the committee's comments to each other and the talks and discussions you've been having privately, it's a mix on this committee. We are not opposing the program. We run a Hunters Against Hunger program at the Deer Hunters Association. Our concern is the dollar surcharge and the funding that has been happening in the DNR the last four bienniums and is probably going to continue through the next biennium, where there has been about a $25 million subsidy given to the Fisheries Division of Wildlife from wildlife hunting dollars. There's also a surplus in the Game and Fish Fund to the tune of about $4.8 million. So with those two figures, we believe we've been spending plenty of money on deer hunting activities and not been getting a lot back for it. Plus, there is that surplus in the Game and Fish Fund. Our preference would be that the dollar be taken from that.
That's another question.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Egan. This is the author, Representative Hansen. Is there a provision in the bill? I haven't read it since it was in our committee. I don't recall a provision that allows to address maybe possibly something that Representative McNamara brought up. Is there a provision in the bill to suspend this program that the DNR, or do they have the authority to suspend this program through, what do they call that, their good cause clause or doctrine, in case that we have some terrible severe winters and the deer population is decimated, or as Representative Cornish says, the timber wolf population gets further out of control and there's even more deer taken, and we need to disincentify the kind of hunting that I would do, where I, you know, as I said, I haven't hunted deer, but I probably will now.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill. There isn't at this time, but I know in the previous committee there was some discussion about sunsets as well, giving some flexibility, and I'm willing to work with folks to look at that. As I've mentioned with Mr. Kelleher before, you know, the next stop is a money committee. These issues of, I believe that there's a legitimate question about how funds are accumulated there and how they're spent, and that we can look at that as we get into the finance committees. So I'm open to looking at that, Representative Dill, and the question of giving some DNR authority to do that.
Well, to that point, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
Is Mr. Bongus, could he come down for a second? I got a question for him. Thank you, Mr. Bongus, Mr. Chairman. I'm learning about the department even more than I have in my 4 years of service here, and I've learned about this good cause or good clause, or I forget the exact terminology you use. Do you have the authority now to, in the event that something happened, do you have the authority to suspend this program or other programs in regard to the management of wildlife?
Mr. Vargas.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dill, we don't. The good cause exemption that you're referring to is a little bit of a different example, where it just allows us to quickly amend our rules to incorporate changes made by the legislature, where we have parallel rules that need to be adjusted also. Specific to the issue that you're raising, though, we do have expedited rule authority to set deer quotas and limits, and we kind of do it on a tiered scale where there's a lot of deer in relation to the number of hunters that we expect. Those are called intensive management areas, and that's where, as there was earlier discussion, that's where the limit is five deer per hunter. We have managed areas as kind of the intermediate level where it's two deer per hunter, and then we have lottery areas where you can't shoot an antlerless deer unless you first apply for and receive an antlerless permit. And we make a determination on an annual basis as to which category each deer permit area falls into. So if the deer population were to go down because of weather or wolves or whatever, or disease or whatever the factor might be, we do have authority on an annual basis within literally weeks to be able to set the quotas for the taking of antlerless deer. It would not give us authority to decide whether or not a person could avail themselves of this donation program, but we do have control over how many deer they can shoot and whether they can be antlerless deer.
Representative Dillon.
So I think I heard what you said was is that you could control the harvest. It seems that the winter time was the biggest threat, maybe disease is, but winter is the biggest threat. It follows the hunting season, and then after you assess the deer hunting population or the deer population after a severe winter, you could adjust the seasons. But the program would still continue forward if it were passed into law, and the people could take a dollar for a dollar. They could have it processed, but they would be able to take less deer. That, I think I heard that's what you said.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bill, that's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Feeney, Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Bogus or for the author, if the Bluffland Whitetails are the group that wants this, what about putting this program in for a couple of years just for the southeastern corner of the state? Where if you're, is that zone three? If you, what if just zone three hunters do this and we'll try it and see if it works?
Ms. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, that was one of the options that I put forward to the Deer Hunters Association, was to do by zone or to do by license type, but that was not supported.
Any other questions? Seeing no other questions of
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackbar.
I want my deer hunters to know that I'm not supporting this bill, so I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Hansen, do you have any further
no
comments? Seeing no other questions, Representative Hansen renews this motion that House File 278, the First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. But we'll take the roll.
Banner?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Dill?
Yep.
Gardner?
Yes.
Hackbar?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hoppe?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
No?
Yes.
Odom?
No.
Osmond? Saylor? Scalzi?
Yes.
Tal?
Yeah.
Timothy?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, Ethan.
Yes.
Representative Pringlestead.
The vote being 10 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And we are going to move one bill up on the agenda of Representative Loeffler, if she is here. I guess I don't see her. So, oh, there she is.
Yeah, she keeps bringing the tree and you can't see her.
And while Representative Loeffler is sitting down, I will move House File 1183, the First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations, Reform, Technology, and Elections.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Loeffler.
It's a delight to be here. If you're competing alternative vision for the future here. The purpose of this bill is twofold. One is to clarify responsibilities and authorities of the Department of Natural Resources and Agriculture. And the second is to establish a forest protection plan through the work of a task force that would work over the interim to help us to better prepare for emerald ash borer and other invasive tree pests. The authority changes in this bill would be that to clarify that the Department of Agriculture retains the lead agency responsibility for new emerging forest pests. And so they would deal with early detection, containment, and hopefully eradication to protect us, while the Department of Natural Resources will assume more responsibilities for the management of established tree pests like Dutch elm, oak wills, and others that unfortunately have become pervasive throughout our state. And it basically transfers those authorities back and forth between the two agencies to better clarify. The Department of Natural Resources then will clearly be in charge of the Shade Tree Program, which was funded in the past to help municipalities, cities, counties, and townships deal with with Dutch elm and oak wills in the past, and they'll continue to do that while the Department of Ag focuses its responsibilities on the new threats. And if you're not familiar with, I suspect most people are here, we are right now in a situation in which we're under threat of emerald ash borer entering our state. It's on the east. As the farthest it's come closest to us is Illinois. It's expected to be next year in Wisconsin. And it may or may not be even in Minnesota here now, depending on how it travels. And that's why I'd like to say that I support, at least personally, Representative Hansen's bill dealing with firewood, because we know that that is a major transport vehicle. Emerald ash borer is going to be a huge threat in tight budgets if it ever gets established here. Michigan has already spent over $350 million in federal, state, and local dollars dealing with that, and they haven't been able to manage it. The handout that's gone around shows how ash in all of its form is a dominant tree cover throughout the state of Minnesota, so we have a lot at risk. And the difference between emerald ash borer and Dutch elm and oak wilt and some of the other invasive species that we've had to deal with is that you don't just take down the damaged tree. At this point, while there is in development pesticides and other approaches that are being tested, the current practice is that you take down not only the diseased tree, but all ash within a half mile of that diseased tree. And so it will create a whole new challenge for us in terms of public relations, the public's willingness to accept eradication if it gets established, which is why we want to make sure that there is a strong plan to detect it early, to deal with it quickly so we don't lose control. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has the lead agency at the federal level, and they project that states over the next 10 years will be spending $25 billion, that's with a B, in state and local government expenditures related to emerald ash borer. So it's really important that we get ahead of this. The General Accounting Office has done a study of six different tree pest invasions across the nation and what went right and what went wrong. And number one was the issue was that oftentimes it wasn't detected early enough. All of the major invasions started in an urban or developed area, not in state or federal forests where we have a lot of eyes on the trees. They tended to start in the developed areas and then moved out and been established by the time they were detected. And then in several states, the real problem was that we had state agencies and federal agencies fighting with each other about who was in charge. And hopefully we're already in the process of sorting that out in Minnesota so that that's not time lost here. And with that, I will take questions. I know that you respect the work of your divisions, and I do have a number of people who would be willing to offer testimony and perspective if you'd like to take that.
Representative Lagunias has a question.
Thank you. More of a comment, I think. Representative Loeffler, I really appreciate your attention to this matter. I think it's really important for us. I see two problems that have to be dealt with. One is I've certainly talked to the people in agriculture, and they say that everything is under control in this state, and they'll make sure it stays out. But I don't see them taking the aggressive postures that they need to do to make sure that this doesn't come into the state. So that really concerns me. Once it comes in, and if it's the DNR's responsibility, I'm concerned because we do not have a good track record of spending money to prevent or deal with invasive species. People call it an emerging area. It's well emerged. And I'm just extremely concerned about the budget for this.
Representative Laffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius. I share your concerns, which is why we have in the bill a broad-based, broadly representative task force that we'll put together in partnership with our state agencies, but under the auspices of the Forest Resources Council, a comprehensive plan, because I think part of the problem has been, I'm not sure there's been a lack of will in the part of people in our state agencies. I think within the budget constraints that they've been given, I don't think they've been able to dream to put together the kind of implementation plan we need. The other thing is state agencies can't do it alone. They need state and local government partners. They need the 700 certified tree inspectors across the state to feel like they're a part of it and they understand how to deal with it. We need appropriate response plans so that the public is ready to accept the remediation plan should we have to implement those. And we need a much more broad-based support basis. And one of the responsibilities of this task force is to address what kind of funding do we need, how can we scale it up if we don't. I think we've been planning for detecting something small. If we detect that it's gotten out of control, how do we get the resources to make sure that they're available? We know the federal government has been a strong partner and has stepped up in other states to offer up the resources that are needed. But I think that I'm hoping that this planning process will lead us towards your vision.
Representative Dale has a question.
Thank you. Very good. Representative Loeffler, page 10, section 34. In our in the Game Fish and Forestry Division, I asked this question about the Forest Resources Council that they shall create. It says in the bill, they shall create and develop the plan and the task force. In that committee, I asked about the Forest Resources Council and how would they be able to pay for that. And I was wondering if you had visited with the Forest Resources Council and what their position was on that portion of the bill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dale, actually David Mehta from the Forest Resources Council is here. He had just kind of off the top of his head thought that the cost of this would be about $75,000 for a staff person picking up per diem mileage expenditures of people who would participate. His council, because this had come up between council meetings, hasn't taken a position because it's not in the governor's budget. My understanding is they're at this point neutral, but if you'd like to hear from Mr. Mehta, you may.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that seems to be the appropriate thing to hear from the Forest Resources Council, Mr. Jumet, on this. $75,000 we are arguing here at the legislature over a lot less than $75,000 when it gets down to it.
Bottom line.
Mr. Chair, and while we're waiting for Mr. Jumet to come up, I can say, well, I know we're going to scrap for every $5,000, $10,000 that's available. When you look at the tens of millions of dollars that have been invested in other states where they haven't had the kind of appropriate planning, I think it's a good preventive investment for us. And I have talked to Mr. Zemeta, and perhaps in his testimony he can cover this, about the possibility of securing federal or other matching funds to help us stretch and meet that budget.
Mr. Chair, to that point.
Representative Dale.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lawler. I mean, there's no doubt that I completely support the bill, and Representative McNamara has been very vocal on the fact that this bill, Representative Wagenius, this is a great bill. The minute you told me about it, I said you'd get a hearing immediately, and so I don't want anyone to think that I'm not supporting the bill, but I just have this concern that the Forest Resources Council does a lot of good work, and I don't want them to be excessively burdened by this, so if we could hear from Mr. Zemeta.
Mr. Zemeta, if you could state your name, please.
My name is Dave Zemeta, Executive Director of the Minnesota Forest Resources Council. Mr. Chair, Representatives, Representative Dill, Representative Loeffler, appreciate the opportunity to speak before you. I wanted to mention that the Forest Resources Council sent Representative Eakin a letter back on January 30th of this year expressing making a number of points. It was a formal resolution that the council had passed at its January 24th meeting this year related to invasive species and emerald ash borer, and we certainly, the council certainly shares the concerns expressed by Representative Loeffler, Representative Lagenius, Representative Bill, and others that there's a best threat. That said, I want to make clear that the council is neutral on Section 34 of this bill, and there are three reasons for this. First off, Section 34 has funding implications, as Representative Bill has pointed out, and funds to implement Section 34 are not part of the governor's budget request. So I'm not going to testify in support of it, being a representative of the executive branch here. Second, the council's up for reauthorization this session, has ongoing operational and one-time budget requests that are very high priority for the council and that are part of the governor's budget request. And if I recall right, I spoke to those briefly at a hearing earlier this session in Representative Bill's subcommittee. Council Chair Al Sullivan and I discussed this last week, and we're both concerned about potential budget and workload implications of Section 34, given an array of other demands that the council is very likely facing in the rest of fiscal year 07 as well as fiscal years 08 and 09. And then finally, the full 17-member council has not had an opportunity to discuss this proposal. We haven't met since January 24th, and a wide array of interests are represented on our council, a number of which are mentioned in Section 34 of this bill. So that said, I want to make clear I concur with the concerns related to the threat that emerald ash borer and other invasive species pose to the state, to the state's forest resources, rural as well as urban resources. And ash is a particularly important species in a number of areas and for a number of reasons. Economically, culturally, for the American Indian tribes that are represented on our council, for example, and then also in terms of our street trees and throughout the state, you know, urban community forests. So with that, I'll stop and be happy to field any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Zemeta. Representative Dill.
So, Mr. Zemeta, thank you for that testimony. I sense that this would be something that would be within the purview of the Forest Resources Council from your testimony if this were to become law. And I sense that you have some concern about the appropriation, and I also sense the urgency of the bill. So I would ask Representative Wagenius what her take would be on this. I assume this bill is going to travel to you ultimately after its many stops. And if we put a amendment on this bill either here or in another committee with a blank appropriation, what is your feeling about that? Since we don't know what the number is yet, they haven't met. But I do think, it appears to me that we need to have some sensitivity to this portion of the bill.
Representative Lagenius?
Representative Dill and members, I think we've been remiss as a state not dealing with invasives in a far more aggressive manner. The citizen involvement portion of this is particularly appealing because if citizens aren't the eyes and ears for invasives, we don't have the personnel in the state to deal with it. So I think this is a good direction. I think the there should be an appropriation. It should come to the Finance Committee, and that's something that can't be dealt with here and now because we don't know a specific number. But I do think it's a good idea. It seems to me that this council has the expertise, and frankly, I can't see anything more important for the state right now than to get a handle on invasives. And this may be the model for other invasives. I don't see it as strictly an emerald ash borer issue, I think it's, we don't have a good model for handling right this minute. Would you agree with that, Representative Deal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with the bill more. But the point is that somebody has to pay, and as you said, we've been remiss in our investment in these things. So I'm going to ask procedurally, being a new person here, could we go ahead and take the rest of the testimony on the bill and the people for or against, and just very temporarily lay the bill over, have Mr. Helen make some appropriation language, and then amend the bill here so that we send it on beyond that with some appropriation language with a blank? Or I think we're going to pass this bill, but I'd like to see something out of this committee because we didn't have it in our committee, and the reason was in my committee is because we wanted Representative Loeffler to talk to Mr. Zemeta about this. Okay. So procedurally, I'm willing to consider taking that course if that's acceptable to the chair and the author.
And it would be acceptable to me as the chair of the division, as Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman, that was my intent all along, was to have it end at the Finance Committee. This will make sure that happens. And the two people that I've been clued to as possible additional testimony would be Jim Herman, who's a forester from Minneapolis, and Bob Fitch from the Minnesota Landscape and Nursery and Landscape Architecture.
Well, with that, I was thinking if there's any other, I don't know if there's any other questions right at this moment, but maybe we could move on if we're going to lay this over and then deal with the other bills.
Mr. Chair, my intent was just to lay it over to the end of the meeting, and then we'll listen to the appropriation language that Mr. Helen, I see, is writing now, and then finish the bill.
I see. Okay. Yes, that would be, yes, Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're taking extra questions on the bill right now then?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, just a question about the grants. I see the top of page 2, bottom of page 8, it talks about grants that the commissioner could make. And so I'm wondering about the need for this. So would the situation right now be that they're not able to make these grants? Is that right?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Tingle said that this is a reorganization primarily of existing language, although there's some clarifying of it. The state grant program, with the Shade Tree program and Minnesota Relief, have in the past been funded, but the Shade Tree grant program has not been for a number of years due to tight budget. And the relief program state funding has typically come, as you know, from LCCMR, and that was not recommended this year as they're looking at a different change in focus after reorganization. And but the state agencies felt it was important to keep this here because as federal funds become available, they have been able to use this granting mechanism to distribute funds to cities and counties and others. And so they would like to maintain this authority in statute because it gives them a nice platform on which to use those resources that come from outside. And I'm hopeful that at some point we'll actually be able to reinvest in those programs as well. If you'd like further clarification, we have representatives from both the Department of Ag and the Department of Natural Resources.
Mr. Chair. Representative Tinglestad.
Another quick question. Bottom of page 11 is the repealer. Is that because of the reorganization, or could you tell me what's in the repealer?
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Tinglestad, yes, those are all the ag responsibilities have been transferred to DNR now, and so they're being taken out of the ag statute. If you want to go through them item by item, we could, but that's basically what the situation is. It's a reorganization bill.
Mr. Chair, just one more quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, you mentioned earlier in your testimony that Michigan has spent $350 million federal, state, local. Do you know how that was split? Is it majority federal, or getting some ideas for how Minnesota would look potentially?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tingle said, my understanding is that about $300 million of that is federal. So the feds have really stepped up, but that still left $50 million in state and local. Am I correct, Mr. Thomason? All right. Here is giving me the thumbs up. I've got it right. So that's basically the split, and I'm delighted that the feds have been a strong partner wherever these have shown up, and we're expecting that they will be for us as well. But you need to have the infrastructure to receive it and to use it appropriately.
Okay. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Tinglestad's point, and to the author, Representative Loeffler, I think it's important, as Representative Wagenius said, the priority that maybe we need to find $75,000. I think it's going to be a lot smarter to find a few hundred thousand dollars now instead of $50 million of state and local money in the future. So I would hope Representative Wagenius and Dill, Representative Dill, excuse me, for bringing those points up. We do need to put some money in this and do it the right way now, because it will be penny-wise and not dollar-dumb if we do it correctly now.
Good point, Representative McNamara. And Mr. Zimetta wants to respond.
Representative Eakin, members of the committee, just wanted to respond that the $75,000 estimate is something I just pulled out of the air in response to requests from Representative Loeffler the other day, and there's been zero opportunity to confer with Department of Natural Resources or Department of Agriculture as to what a appropriate funding request would be. That was a very initial estimate. I think I said a range of 50 to 100,000, 75 in the middle, but you know, and that's given the timing that's in the bill here, which would be a report by December 15th of 07. That's not very long. It would be like 5 months of meetings to really try to get something done, assuming we got ramped up right after the money was available July 1. So that's not very much time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Zimetta. Representative Dill, if you have.
Thank you, Chair Eakin. Well, I think Mr. Helen has something, and I think that the committee understands, Mr. Zimetta, that that was a fly in the dark, fly without instruments type of estimate. I think the Chair of Environment Finance knows that as well. So I think Mr. Helen has something, and I don't know if you want to make that my amendment or Representative Loeffler, when you hear it, if you want to make it your amendment, or I don't. It makes no difference to me how it plays out here. So,
Mr. Chair, I'm not a member of the committee, so I think it would be appropriate for you to move that.
Okay, Mr. Helen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dill and members, it would be on line 11 and after, or excuse me, page 11 after line 34, just would be a new section 35 appropriations. And then we'd have a blank appropriation that was appropriated to the Forest Resources Council for the purposes of Section 34, which is their duties in relation to the task force.
Representative Dill.
Representative Wagenius, Representative Osment, the two lords of environment finance. Is that something you want to comment on?
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dill, it works for me. I think we do have a remaining problem, and it's one that Representative McNamara has brought up. This is, once something gets to the state, it's the prevention from getting to the state that I am comfortable with this as a mechanism once it gets to the state. I am not comfortable with our keeping it out of the state at this point, and that's where I think we need to concentrate some more effort, because that is where the mega bucks come in. So I think that's a something that we're going to be talking about later on this afternoon with Representative Hansen still, if I'm correct about that. And so we can let that go for a while, but I do think that's where the bigger issue is right this minute. Representative Field, does that is that helpful?
Representative
Dill. Yes, that is. And I'm in agreement with you on that, Representative Wagenius. I wanted to laser fire on this problem. And I think as this bill moves forward, or even today, we keep hitting the different targets that are not quite in the bill yet. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would, unless Representative Osment has any comment on the appropriation, though he doesn't, I'd move the amendment as proposed by Representative Helen, by Council Helen.
Representative Dill moves the amendment that was presented by Mr. Helland. Is there a number that we need to apply, or just a oral amendment? Any discussion? Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And yes, Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, I'm wondering about the due date of the report. It's page 11, line 24, at December 15th, and I know that this is maybe more of a GovOps issue, but it seems like most of the things we've seen going through this committee have had due dates of either January 15th or January 30th, 2008, to kind of give the organization a little more time to pull it together over the holidays, since we probably won't be in session until February next year, so Would you be amenable to moving that date out, giving them a little more time to pull it together?
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Singleton, I'd actually like to leave it where it is right now as we confer further with the Forest Resources Council. I tend to think it's that most groups don't meet over the holidays anyhow. And if this is going to be their recommendations or things that will have fiscal implications for us when we convene, I'd like to have a little time for them to start working with others to start to identify and pursue other funding sources and other things that they might not be able to do. I mean, I think they have to kind of develop the plan, and then we're going to need to have some time before session convenes to figure out how do we put together a realistic approach to implementing that plan. And so I know it's a really tight time frame, and we'll be open to discussing that further, and as we go to the Government Operations Committee, we'll look at that. I think that's comfortable for you. The other thing I should note, and I'm sorry I didn't mention this in my overview, and I had mentioned this in Representative Dill's committee as well, is that the bill is currently drafted, refers to both forest pests and shade tree pests. And one of the first questions I had is, what's the difference? And there really isn't a difference, but before we combine them into a tree pest, I was asked by the state agency to let them do further research, because forest pest has been used traditionally on all kinds of programs across things. I just want to make sure that changing it to tree pest doesn't interfere with any of the federal requirements and those sorts of things. So that may be a clarifying amendment that would be offered in government operations. But these bugs don't know if it's an environmental planting in the back or front yard of a suburban home or if it's in the middle of a state forest. They just look for food.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, then Representative Loeffler will the motion at House File 1183, First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Bill is passed. Thank you. Next, we still have several other bills on the agenda. We will be hearing House File 631, Representative Anzels. And while Representative Anzels comes to the podium, I will move that House File 631, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Representative Anzels, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 631 is the DNR's forestry bill. And if it's in order, I would move it.
Yes, and to the bill, Representative Anzels.
Mr. Chairman and members, to begin with, I would orally ask to strike Section 5 and 6, which deal with the collection and sale of decorative boughs.
Okay.
Representative
Anzels. Representative Anzels moves to strike Sections 5 and 6. And I will move your amendment that we strike Sections 5 and 6. Any comments to that amendment?
Chair and members, this was a section of the bill that did receive some discussion in Chairperson Dill's committee. It's a work in progress. The department would like an opportunity to reevaluate the concept and work with all the stakeholders involved in this cottage industry in primarily northern Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Anzels. Any questions on it? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment that we strike Sections 5 and 6 signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Anzels to the bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Sections 1, 2, 3, and 4 all relate to the Forest Resource Assessment Products account. There is no fiscal implication to this. Simply what the department is requesting is that three separate accounts be folded into one, and so that there would be one account totaling $1.7 million, and services would be provided to Bowser, county units of government, Forest Service, and services would be such things as surveys, data collection, aerial photography, and so on. It gives the department a more coherent way of collecting and capturing those resources and funneling those resources into high priority items. The Section 8 of the bill refers to what was discussed in Representative Loeffler's bill, the Forest Resources Council. We need this section in order to sunset the repeal of the act which creates the Forest Resources Council. And as you know, this council consists of 17 persons appointed by the governor, responsible for sustaining our forests, monitoring harvesting, promoting new assessments of trends and new technology, and the governor is recommending in this section that in FY08, $1,180,000 be appropriated, and in fiscal year 09, $780,000 be appropriated, and those are governor's recommendations. Excuse me, it's section 10 of the bill now. My apologies. Thank you. And at the table with me is Bob Tomlinson, a familiar face to all of you with forestry at the DNR, and we stand for questions.
Any questions at all? Yes, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anzalai. My question, I believe, is for Mr. Tomlinson. On page 3, the lines 327 through 333, would this allow those folks that currently have posted bonds and do not want to log the current, what probably is prices that aren't reflective of the current market, would that allow them to now post a 15% cash deposit and, in effect, possibly only have to give up 15% plus interest as opposed to a 100%. And then I see it sounds like I'm going to get the answer I was expecting. Let me confirm that it was never your intent to disproportionately penalize folks that posted a bond instead of cash. That was something I believe we did in 03 to allow flexibility. It wasn't to penalize certain folks.
Mr. Tomlinson. Mr. Chair, Bob Tomlinson, DNR Division of Forestry. You're right on both accounts there, Representative McNamara. It would allow those folks that have 100% certainty, you know, surety down already on a sale. It's about 17% of the total outstanding sales that we have to represents about 17% of the value, I should say, of the total outstanding sales that we have on the books to go back to the 15%, which is basically one, as you mentioned, the second point you were making, that when we set this in place, it was not our intention to penalize them, you know, or anything like that. It was a customer service thing for them. So we're perfectly comfortable with it. We think it's a good amendment to the bill that was added in Representative Gill's committee.
Thank you, Mr. Tomlinson. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to concur with Representative McNamara. I think that regardless of whatever we think about Representative Dill's bill about 15% allowing for a turn back of that or not, these are the people that would potentially be most penalized, and we definitely want to work with them regardless. So I appreciate the language and support it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Tinkleston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick thing to you, Mr. Chair, the author, with the striking of sections 5 and 6, I think we need to amend the title too, so that part is taken out so there's no confusion. Maybe that's incorporated within that amendment. I don't know.
And Representative Anzels?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Procedurally, I appreciate the question. The words modifying decorative bollards provisions would need to be struck.
Okay.
And I, it's appropriate, I'll make that oral amendment.
Okay. And actually, Mr. Helen said that they would be able to take care of that in the revisor's office. It's a technical change.
Thank you, Representative Pinkston.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 631 of the First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. And next we have House File 1016, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, while Representative Hansen is coming up, I just thought I'd like to mention that earlier today when Representative Hansen had an amendment, I brought to his attention that we really need to discuss that a little bit ahead of time. I wanted to make sure Representative Hansen knew that I wasn't picking on him on that. It's normally when we have an amendment, we're allowed to incorporate issues in. When we first introduce a bill, we're allowed to put it in the bill form that the author wants. But once it's gone through a process, from there on, we have to have explanations and vote on them. You can't just put it into the form that the author wants just kind of automatically, or really shouldn't. That's not the custom usage.
Right.
So I just wanted to explain that that's what I was doing. I wasn't trying to goof up your bill or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just process.
I understood that, and I thank you for reminding us of that. So very helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Osmond, I appreciate your help on that.
And Representative Hansen.
We're getting started. Mr. Meyer has some presents, I think, to hand out here. So, Mr. Chair, I move House File 1016.
Representative Hansen moves House File 1016. First Committee Engrossment be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations, Reform, Technology, and Elections. And Representative Hansen to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is kind of follows up closely with Representative Loeffler's bill. This is looking at a specific issue with firewood, and I have Mr. Meyer here to talk to the bill.
Mr. Chair, members.
Mr. Meyer, welcome.
Good morning. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Natural Resources. The bill, committee report that is in front of you reflects the work that took place in the subcommittee when we talked about this issue several weeks ago. Specifically, we addressed several points. One, you'll see in Section 2 that the ban does not go into effect until after the commissioner issues an order. This order will be issued by written notification published in the State Register, and then that will trigger the rest of the restrictions on the firewood that's in the bill. You'll see once that order is published, a person may not possess firewood on land administered by the commissioner unless the firewood, one, was obtained by a firewood distribution facility located on land administered by the commissioner, two, was obtained from a firewood dealer who is selling firewood that is approved by the commissioner under paragraph B, or three, has been approved by the commissioner under paragraph B, which is that commissioner's order published in the State Register, which starts on page 2.4. I do have a draft commissioner's order, but rather than hand it out to you, I'm waiting for the commissioner to approve that, so you can see what we're recommending to put in the State Register, actually, once the bill has passed and signed into law. You're all well aware of the issue we're facing with the Emerald Ash Borer and how it was moved in other states by firewood, by residents onto state land, so that's why we're dealing with this issue here. This is a small piece of that issue, though, and I know we've talked about ag and their abilities and their authorities, and I think there may be some language to talk about some of that as well. In addition, we've amended the definition of firewood. You'll see on 2.10, for the purposes of this section, firewood means any wood that it's intended for use in a campfire, which is defined in 88.01, 3 feet by 5 feet in a metal ring or a protective ring, etc., which clearly clearly shows people what we're talking about. In addition, the language, 2.8, the first year of this law, the person violating it will be subject to just confiscation of the firewood. So we will be working with them, taking their firewood, letting them know what the problems are. And then after that, the language says after May 1st, a petty misdemeanor penalty will apply. Some of the questions that came up in subcommittee dealt with the education piece. The bookmark piece I sent out to you will be going out to every person who receives a campground registration permit from us. That when you do an advanced registration, we send out a letter back, kind of a receipt, that will have that information plus other information in there. Our website is updated now. If you go to the home page, you will see on the right side there's a box, the third one down, I think, that says do not bring firewood into our parks, something like that. You click on that, it talks about the threats from yellow ash borer, what we're seeing. When you make a reservation online, there is a box that tells you what's going on with firewood. And also when you call the 1-800 number, they tell you there about the firewood prohibitions and encourage you not to bring firewood. We have not said that it is against the law yet because we don't have the law passed. But as soon as that law is signed into law and the commissioner's order is there, we will be updating that with the most specific information. I also passed around a bumper sticker, magnetic bumper sticker for you guys if you want to put it on your car. If not, we'll collect them after committee and I'll just sneak it on your car when you're not looking. No. We'll use them again. So the education piece is very important. I know there are a lot of concerns about that. We are moving full steam ahead because this is a huge threat to our thousands and millions of ash trees in the northern part of the state and all over the place. So we've worked with a lot of people's concerns. We appreciate your support, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. And I agree, the education part is extremely important, considering the fact that is it 15% of the lands or the parks that are located on state lands? Is that correct? So there's still a significant number of parks and campgrounds out there that are not going to be subject to the law or the penalty that's being imposed here, as I understand. So education is the way that you can reach them.
Mr. Chair, members, just briefly on that point, we have worked with the campground and resort associations and the Resorts Congress. They are supportive of these issues. They will be working with us jointly to make sure people understand and educate their members. And the box that I'm passing around, too, is an education campaign kit prepared by the Department of Ag and with APHIS that we will be utilizing and getting out to all of our local parks, our county parks, and anyone who's interested in getting that promotional material. There'll be posters, signs. We hope to do some billboards, possibly things like that. Full court press is where we're going on the education piece, and it's because it is so severe of a threat.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. And Representative Breinart?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, I'm wondering if the process is currently in place for approving firewood dealers.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have it ready to go once the law comes into effect. We're working with local vendors right now, getting them under contract for our firewood in our campgrounds. We're making sure people are aware that we will be coming in and certifying. What we're looking at is, you know, making sure the wood's locally grown or grown from the region, 50 miles or something perhaps, that they can certify where it came from, and then we will give them the proper documentation to give to their customers once they purchase that wood from them to come into the park and provide to us.
Representative Breinart.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, here's the context for my question. We buy wood locally in fairly large quantities. We have a wood-burning stove in our home, and we habitually take that wood to campgrounds with us. So is our dealer going to have the opportunity to be approved by this process, or are you only approving people who sell wood already within the campgrounds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beinart, we're working with the people selling wood locally to the campground customers. The situation you're talking about is something that we need to deal with ag with, and ag will be working with those vendors as well to try to deal with that. I don't know, and maybe we could bring up Mr. Friso. I'm not sure where they're at with that process right now, but it is an important piece that we need to deal with.
Any other questions at all? You know, if Mr. Friso wanted to come forward, or Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And at some point, Representative, I have an amendment that Representative Hansen's also signed on. I don't know, should I move that now, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
My amendment, it does broaden the bill substantially. I think it'll require Representative Hansen concurring with additional chairs to see what if it would need to, for instance, go to Commerce potentially. But what it deals with is the firewood sale distribution across county and or state boundaries. I think this is a bigger part of the issue. I know Mr. Meyer is dealing with just the state parks one, and that was the original intent of this bill. It was my point in Chair Dill's committee that actually I think this amendment is probably more important. There's been a number of, including Representative Solberg, Representative Moll's discussion about the counties and why are counties included in this proposed amendment on line 1.20. Counties are included because under current regulation, that's how these pests are regulated when they've been infested in individual counties, and that's probably how it will first happen. This pest will move into Minnesota, probably in some bordering counties, and will then regulate and not want movement from those counties. That currently happens with different pests like Japanese beetle, where we've been quarantined via county. And so the in the nursery plant material business, we are subjected to inter-county regulations in the movement currently. And so this would be, the reality, I believe, much easier with firewood than what it's been with plant material. It's a very involved process, the Department of Ag involved. So I will say I personally feel it's important that we include the word county. I think there's probably some members that see the frustration with that or have would rather not see that word. So that's basically it. I guess maybe Representative Hansen would want to weigh in, possibly.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, did the amendment get moved?
Yes.
Okay. Amendment A070237 was brought to me last week by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and they would probably be available to discuss their rationale for it. They brought it to Representative McNamara first, and
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, they brought it to both of us, I guess. They just know we're such a great team, and it was exemplified in your deer hunting bill earlier.
And if you could state your name, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gear Friso. I'm the director of the Plant Protection Division with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And this amendment is something that would be extremely helpful to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. We conduct inspections of known pathways or introductions of plant pests, and we check log mills, for example, Christmas trees, even nursery stock, and a lot of pathways. Currently, there already exists labeling requirements for firewood that is either sold in bulk or individually wrapped. But as our inspectors have gone through and looked at those labeling on that firewood, the information is somewhat limited to kind of weights and measures sorts of parameters. And what we really need to know as trying to enforce or prevent the introduction of invasive pests is to know where that firewood actually came from. And the county information is especially important because some states, Wisconsin, for example, where half the state is the counties are quarantined, the other half are not. So by adding this language to currently existing labeling requirements for firewood, this would greatly help our inspectors to determine where that firewood is coming from, and also help if there is a point introduction that we could do trace backs to determine where that pest came from.
Thank you, Mr. Brazen. Representative Moll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara and or Hansen. Let me just tell you, at least from the perspective of somebody who's a couple of neighbors actually in the firewood business, what this would mean for them. They usually go to a site, to the timber sale, work something out with the logger. Where I live, they're very close access to Kuchiching, Itasca, Cass, or Beltrami County, and collect the some of the slabs or additional things they work out with the logger, they might cut that on site or bring it home, split it, cut it, and then package it up in $2 to $3 bundles. They usually sell wholesale them for $2, and the DNR, the Forest Service, sells them for $4. And so what this would require them to do is actually have a tag on that one bundle delineating where, which county the wood came from, not just the state, but the county too. So they might say, well, you know, these two logs came from Itasca, these two, and it seems, you know, I understand the point, but in practice it seems very onerous for people who are, you know, not making a whole lot of money as it is. I mean, these are people that live in trailers. It's a tough business, you know, the representative Anzell's previous bill, they maybe collect some boughs in the fall and, you know, collect some seeds to sell to the DNR or to the Forest Service for red and white pines. I mean, you're going to really put an undue burden upon some small businesses that are just barely making it now. And I don't understand. I mean, it seems to me that the location, you know, when you certify this process, you know, so whether it be at a state park or Forest Service campground, they're going to know what state this stuff is coming from. And to say that, you know, that this stand most of this stuff is aspen or pine. This stand in Itasca County is okay, but this one right across the line in Beltrami County is not. I mean, I just, in practice, it seems pretty problematic for people who are actually doing it. And with that in mind, and maybe the author of the amendment or the bill could comment, but I would like to propose an oral amendment to the amendment, striking subsection C there, striking county or, and then the same thing on the other side, 211C, striking county or. It would make this less problematic for the people who are actually doing this. And I understand that, you know, you're trying to collect some data. I would argue that you can collect that data otherwise without really impacting these people who are doing the stuff. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that oral amendment, county or striking county or on both the front and the back.
Okay, Representative Moe offers an oral amendment to the amendment, striking county or on line 1.20, page 1, and on page 2, striking county or on line 2.11.
Oh, yeah.
It also says in the second part of that sentence, county and state.
Yeah, county, thank you.
So you would also want to move to strike county.
Correct.
And
on line 1.21.
Okay, on line 1.21, strike county and 212, strike county and.
Correct. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moy, I think you're meaning well. One, specifically, you mentioned a potential constituent of yours that collects firewood from four counties. I believe, and we can ask Mr. Friso this, but all four of those counties would currently be clean, so they could certainly list they collect from all four. That would be okay. What's important is there are counties in the state of Michigan that are not clean. We need to know what county this stuff's coming from. I understand this is going to cause problems for folks. Whether it's folks buying firewood, we need to work through this from a clean county, and then handling that wood, we need to keep track of that. Your persons, you talked about, would be okay. If we only list the state, if we quarantine one county in the state, Houston County, say in July gets quarantined, I believe your guy's out of business because we don't know. It only says Minnesota. I think it's to the advantage to keep county in there. I will just tell you, folks, if you guys, and I was not here, excuse me for the connotation, you legislators that were here when you dealt with Dutch Elm, this is bigger than that. And we have a chance to be ahead of the curve here a little bit. I think it's important that we keep track of the county and allow. This is going to be back next year and the year after. We're going to be dealing with this each year as we. This is a learning process, but I think we need to keep track of the county. And I don't know if Mr. Friso or Representative Hansen want to weigh in.
And Representative Wagini has had a question first.
Yes, thank you. I mean, we do have a huge concern here, and that we can be very artful, though, in the way we draft this. Mr. Friese?
Friso.
This just says, you know, you've got to see where it comes from. Do we currently ban firewood from certain counties in Michigan from crossing our border?
Mr. Friso.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquinius, there is currently a prohibition against the movement of any ash species, so that's firewood, if it's coming from the quarantined states. So that would be all of Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, and those states. Ash firewood is prohibited from those, from moving out of those states.
Okay. Representative Joaquinius.
Yes. Okay. One of the ways that perhaps we could see a compromise here is that as long as we don't see emerald ash borer here, then I'm not sure the county information is necessary. But if we had an automatic trigger about this, that if we do see emerald ash borer in this state, then everything needs to be labeled by county. And in that I think Representative McNamara then makes a good argument that counties that are clean, would be helpful for them. And it wouldn't be necessarily that you have to list by county. And this is just more drafting and being artful about drafting. You could say a list of counties. So you wouldn't have to know where each piece of firewood comes from. But if you were sure that it came from one of the three, it would be okay as long as they were clean counties. So I'm just saying that there's some possible ways to draft this to make it work better for everybody. And if folks want to go that direction, I'll help in drafting, but I'm not going to spend the time if it doesn't.
Representative Wagenius, that would probably work if we're just dealing with the emerald ash borer, but it does apply also to other pests, including the gypsy moth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So some of which are already here, so I don't know if that would... Representative Moe?
I appreciate Representative Wagenius' effort to try to work through this. I just want to say in practice, I live in Beltrami County, but I'm, a few miles from Cass County, a few miles from Itasca County. Yet there are portions of Beltrami County which are 100 miles from me. And the problem, it seemed just in practice, again, if there's a contamination kind of near where I live, it would make more sense to quarantine portions of Itasca and Cass County than the whole of Beltrami County. Again, I guess I just see in practice, this is, in theory, I see what we're trying to do, and I support that. In practice, I'm not sure we're there. And I would ask again... even though I appreciate, maybe there's a trigger mechanism we can have to have a more aggressive owner's approach. But as it stands, I think this is really too micromanaging the situation. And I would ask for the amendment.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, just I would support Representative McNamara as the author of this amendment. I would note that we're going to have at least two more stops for this bill to go, and there is some urgency. I think the desire of the administration is that this bill goes separate so that we can pass the bill and get the information out to campers this spring. So obviously there's a lot of differences of opinion on this particular amendment, and perhaps doing what was done with Representative Loeffler's bill to set it aside, we've got the clock running, and maybe some of this can get worked out. But we want to, the body of the bill, we want to move, make sure that doesn't get held up for, because it's got a couple of more stops to go before we can get it to the floor. So I don't know what folks think about that. But
and Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand Representative Moe's concerns, and truthfully, whether the county gets left in or left out, I believe we need to have the discussion along the next two stops. I think it's most important that it move. Either I strongly believe it's got to have county in it, but I think Representative Mole, Representative Solberg's concerns need to be addressed. They need to understand. I believe this language will help his constituent. I believe potentially we could be shutting down many more folks than we're going to need to if we didn't have this language in. And we need to know which county the stuff is coming from, but I think we need to have the discussion. So whether it, I think it's important it stay in, but Representative Moe needs to hear and work. We all need to work with the department to understand this. There is going to be potential folks that are going to get messed up with this legislation, but we just need to stop these pests or at least slow them down.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unless I'm missing something, I'm not seeing anything that says that there anything more than labeling. Is there anything that would restrict anything from the sale of a particular county? And if the bill moves and it still has county in there, there's some transparency about knowing where the material comes from. If we do have an infestation, then something else might kick in where the DNR could say, all right, we'll figure out what that means. But I'm not seeing a specific quarantine from any specific county. So, I mean, if we can keep the bill moving, then we can work some other language out that addresses Representative Moe's question.
Mr. Friso.
Mr. Chair, I think it's important to understand that if you get an infestation in a particular county, it really depends on what that pest is, whether or not a county or a quarantine is implemented, and that would trigger Department of Ag authorities to do something about it. The value of having the county in there is that sometimes our ability to detect the pest is not as great as we would like it to be. In the case of gypsy moth, we have some very good tools, and we set 20,000 traps a year for gypsy moth, and we're very confident. But emerald ash borer is something that is very, very difficult to detect. And if we know that there's a particular county that is a point source for emerald ash borer, we would be focusing on any firewood that's coming from surrounding counties. Not necessarily taking a regulatory action, but at least it would point us in the right direction as to where we should be looking. And secondly, I would just mention that a number of pests, there is sometimes a lag from the time they are discovered and before they become a regulated pest. And a good example of that is Cyrex wood wasp, which was a devastating insect found in New York. It is still not regulated. There is still no federal quarantine. And we have found telephone poles coming from that area to Minnesota, and we've been following up on those telephone poles. I know telephone poles isn't firewood, but the point is just identifying, knowing what those pathways are, and that gives us one more tool for us to go after.
Representative Moe.
I'm going to continue to argue this point, Mr. Chairman. In practice, Representative Gardner, when there's a firewood dealer who is collecting firewood from surrounding counties, processing it all at one site, putting a tag on a piece of firewood where this particular wood came from. Well, two things. One, are we gonna need to inspect the site? You know, to talk about to make sure that there's firewood or wood coming to that site from however many counties is also on that tag. And two, again, we're talking about people who really, I mean, it's hard to explain this, but Representative Bill knows this. There's people up there that really are just getting by. I mean, these aren't big business operators. These are people that, you know, that are, get food stamps, the kids get free and reduced lunch, and we're going to require them to have this additional step, which I would argue we haven't proven is actually going to be helpful when the place that is selling this wood, the state park or the Forest Service campground, knows the counties in which that person is collecting this wood. So we're having an additional step for this person who is, these people, a guy down the road doesn't even have a computer. and we're going to require him to do this. I mean, I just don't think we know who we're talking about here. And I would, again, I would appreciate support on the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you for the Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moe, I'm not sure I understand. So you've got a problem with this individual that collects firewood in four counties, and when he gives the bill of lading to the state, you think he's going to have a problem because he doesn't have a computer to write the four counties that he collects the firewood on? Maybe I'm missing it here. If one of those four counties gets quarantined with a potentially federal pest, and we start to move that pest around, he's out of business. They're going to shut him down immediately because the whole state will be quarantined. Whereas if he knows he's not supposed to move stuff from now Beltrami County, I'm assuming he'd still be in business if he knew he could move firewood from three counties. This will help that small person stay in business. The folks in this business, no different than the ones in the logging business, in the nursery business, in the telephone power pole business, have learned to deal with these regulations. This is real, folks. It's affecting firewood. And if we start moving, somebody moves a load of ashwood from Michigan and somehow it gets in the Bemidji area, you will see a reaction like you cannot believe how it will devastate and be potentially hundreds of millions of dollars of economic impact. I wouldn't be concerned about him writing on the bill of lading when he gives it to the state park or to Home Depot or who he's identifying the counties. I would say that's a benefit to him.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Mulroney's motion, the oral amendment to the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
Motion fails. Amendment to the amendment is not adopted. And any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And Representative Hansen, any further comments to the bill as amended? Any Representative Hackbarth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have an amendment to the bill. Also, this was discussed in the Game and Fish Committee where the bill came from. On page 2, line 2.9, the petty misdemeanor penalty that's connected with this. When you have a petty misdemeanor penalty, Mr. Chairman and members, it has a tendency to go on your record. I don't like those kind of penalties for having the wrong kind of firewood that you might bring along with you. You may have cut in your own backyard, for example. I don't mind making people aware of this issue, and they should be made aware of the issue. And I don't even mind fining somebody, but I don't like the fact that we're going to have petty misdemeanor for this sort of thing. So, Mr. Chairman, I went up to House Research and talked to them about petty misdemeanor penalties and civil fines and that sort of thing. And what I've come up with here is I'd make an oral amendment on line 2.9 after the comma A, delete petty misdemeanor penalty and insert civil fine of $250 would be my oral amendment. And I talked to the folks up in House Research. They said that petty misdemeanor penalties could range anywhere from $65 to a cap of $300. But then there's also a surcharge on there of $72 on top of that. So the lowest fine that a petty misdemeanor penalty could be is $137. So I thought I'd compromise at $250. I talked to some folks from DNR. They seemed to think that was okay if that's the way we're going to go. This petty misdemeanor issue was not in the original bill that was brought forward from the department. This was added in the Senate, and I think they just wanted to get at making sure that there was a stiff fine there or some kind of a penalty as opposed to just confiscating the wood. So I think that addresses both the issues, and it addresses my concerns that we're not going to have a petty misdemeanor that might go on somebody's record. And also it takes care of a stiff fine for folks that are not abiding by this law.
Representative Hackbarth moves an oral amendment to, on line 2.9, strike petty misdemeanor penalty, period, and replace that with civil fine of $250, period. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I don't know, Representative Hansen, you want to respond first?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would oppose the amendment, and for one reason and a couple others. First, in the Game and Fish Division, I did offer to work with the author of the amendment, but the author has mentioned that he did meet with a number of people, but he did not meet with me. And I think that Chair Dill would remember that I specifically asked, and I was willing to work with folks on this, and I still am. But here we are at the end of the debate, and the amendment comes forward. Again, Representative Hackbarth has talked to a number of folks, but he hasn't talked with the author of the bill. So I would ask folks to vote against this. On a policy perspective, if the petty misdemeanor, and I understand what Representative Hackbarth is trying to do with the limit, but we can be very prescriptive in statute by talking about amounts of money, or we can provide the petty misdemeanor. If the petty misdemeanor wasn't in there and there wasn't the prescriptiveness, it would fall to a misdemeanor. And I don't think we need to have the misdemeanor in there. I think the petty misdemeanor does match this up with the Senate bill. So I would encourage folks to vote against the amendment.
Any further discussion? Representative Moe.
Mr. Chairman, again, not to say that this isn't potentially a great problem. However, charging somebody with a petty misdemeanor seems pretty egregious to me, and I would support the oral amendment.
Any Representative Dill?
Well, everything that's been said so far by the author is true about this. Although I do support the amendment, I wish it would have been worked out to the satisfaction of the author, although I can't imagine finding someone $250 for some firewood. If someone emailed me yesterday and they got a ticket for operating a snowmobile without a trail sticker, and that was $97. That just seems like the kind of people that go to state parks. I know this is very important, but that just seems a little high to me. $250, Representative Hackbarth. I'm thinking that maybe we have some graduated, offense schedule here, since we can be prescriptive. I don't know what it would be. Just my suggestion.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Dill, I do agree with you on that. And Representative McNamara made a suggestion that I change my amendment to up to $250. And I think that is probably a better amendment. Representative Dill, I agree, too. $250 is probably too much. I was just trying to compromise to get this passed. The main issue with me is the civil or the petty misdemeanor problem of that going on your record, and I want to get rid of that. So I would agree to up to $250, and I would revise my amendment, Mr. Chairman, to read up to $250. Like I said, I did go to House Research, and the folks up there told me that a petty misdemeanor penalty, as it's written, it's $65 to $300. So this fine could, as written, be $300 plus $72, so it'd be $372 for the same penalty if they wanted it to be, as written.
With that, but Representative Dill.
Well, it seems a little more, I have a little more comfort in that. I think that we'll probably be spending an hour debating this on the House floor if the petty misdemeanor is there, because Representative Rukavina will probably be standing on top of his chair by the time the debate is over. So probably better to make some mid-course correction here rather than to let it keep going like that. And I'm sorry that we haven't had peace in the valley on this between you and the author, but I really have to support that amendment that you have now proposed as amended.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbarth.
And I would have been glad to work with the, I hate to have a bickering session here in committee, Mr. Chairman, but there was an amendment after this bill was heard to a bill that I had in the Game and Fish Committee, and the author of this particular bill did not come and discuss that amendment that he brought before the committee on a bill that I was carrying. So a little tit for tat.
Okay.
And with that, I would move to lay the bill on the table.
Representative Hansen moves to lay the bill on the table. Does that include discussion? Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad that I'm getting along with both Representative Hansen and Representative Hackbart, Representative Dillon, Representative Moe all in one day. I absolutely don't want to lay this on the table. We need to.
And I thought I'd mention this is
that non-debatable?
Okay. Non-debatable. So there will be a vote. All those in favor of laying the bill on the table signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is laid on the table. Next, we will be moving to House File 1035, Representative Solberg. Yes, Representative Dill.
I'm going to be presenting the bill. Representative Solberg is in another committee.
Okay.
So this is a relatively short one. There's a piece in the valley on this bill. This has to do with Mesaba Steel and Iron. It has two particular provisions that are on the back of the page. With that, I'll move House File 1035, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill moves House File 1035, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Is there any discussion?
Let me go ahead with the bill. Okay, on line 2, starting on 211, this is a provision that has to do with, normally there is a charge made, as I understand, for title insurance. This waives this as they bought title insurance on the property. And the second item on line 2.16 regards the length of the lease in order for them to get obtain financial assurances, to provide financial assurances to the financiers of the project. They need to have a longer lease than 10 years. So this allows for just this particular piece of property to go to 20 years. And Ms. Lewis is here from the DNR if anyone has any technical questions on this bill.
Okay. Anybody have any questions at all? Representative Skelty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just did have a question. Is this in Itasca County, and who's, I'm wondering whose constituent this is, Mesaba Steel? Is it the same as Minnesota Steel, or?
Did I say Mesaba Steel, Ms. Chair? I meant Minnesota Steel and Iron, and it is in Itasca County. It is Representative Solberg and Representative Saxog's constituents. I'm sorry. Just with a slip of the tongue, it is Mesaba Steel, Minnesota Steel and Iron. I almost did it again. MSI. That's what the property is for.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none with that, Representative Dill renews this motion that House File 1035, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Next, is House File 904, Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move House File 904, and I have an amendment, a technical amendment. It's the 0251 amendment. It came from the department. It's technical. If we want to have discussion on it, Ms. Lewis is here. She could discuss the amendment.
Any discussion or questions for the amendment?
With that, I'll move the amendment, the 0251 amendment.
Yeah, Representative Dill renews his motion to pass A070251 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Bill to the bill.
To the bill as amended, Mr. Chair. This is the department's lands bill, as well as a number of bills incorporated into it regarding different parcels of land across the state that need to have some action, corrective action, some authorization of some nature regarding lands. Each of the bills that are, all of the provisions that are within the bill as presented, as amended, have been approved by the Department of Natural Resources. There is, in the very front of the bill, there are some language about rights of landowners when it comes to some appraisals, and I don't know if anyone has any questions on that. Ms. Lewis is here. She could answer those questions. Otherwise, at this point, this bill is peace in the valley, if I understand it.
Okay. Any further discussion?
With that, Representative Dill renews his motion. Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, I think because it does refer to some additions and deletions to state parks, if we could just briefly have let us know, is that in holdings that they're...
Mr. Chair, Ms. Lewis is here, but I believe that has to do with school trust lands that are being removed from the state park exchanges so that we get the land that's in the state parks, not school trust, and get the school trust out so that it can be managed for the purpose for which it was provided. Maybe Ms. Lewis has something to add to that.
Ms. Lewis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Lewis with the Department of Natural Resources. The amendments for the state park boundaries are small. The Flandreau State Park is adding 508 square feet and deleting 391 square feet. And this is to address unintentional trespass. We're going to subsequently enter into a land exchange with the party. The Whitewater State Park is 5.78 acres. It's part of a larger land acquisition. The landowner wants to sell us everything they have, and we will be using that as a maintenance access road at this point in time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those types of questions usually come up on the floor of the House whenever you talk about adding or subtracting state properties. So.
Any further discussion?
My motion.
Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 904, First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Next, we have Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those members that were not on the Game and Fish Bill, this is the agency and the university's bill coming forward to some of the changes in the Vermilion Highlands WMA, which is the UMAR property down in Dakota County. I would say we had a couple of amendments in Chairman Dill's committee, and I think truthfully they pretty much were non-controversial with the exception potentially Chairman Dill added an amendment about competitive trap shooting that I don't know if either the DNR or the university would want to comment on or if Chairman Dill would want to comment on.
Mr. Chair. Representative Dill.
Well, I have, we moved the bill?
Yes. Representative McNamara.
You know, I'm not sure I did. Chair, I'd like to move House File 632, and I believe, Mr. Chair, we're moving it. Would it be to Chair Wagenius's committee?
Let's see. It would be re-referred to the Committee on Finance, but it'd probably go to Representative Wagenius's committee after that.
Okay, so it's going to Finance next?
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion to move House File 632 to the Finance Committee.
Recommended to pass.
Okay. Recommended to pass.
And Representative Wagenius, you have a comment?
And re-refer to the Committee on Natural Resources.
Okay, from the Finance Committee.
Okay,
Mr. Chair. Okay. So, Representative McNamara moves the bill. Representative Dill.
I have an oral amendment in discussing this with the department and with the representative here from the university. If members, if you look at line 2.3, at the very end of that sentence on line 2.3, the words "and international trap shooting," which trap shooting is on 2.4. Let's see. I got to make sure I got that right. Sports American. Just on line 2.3, remove the word "and international." That is problematic for the university. So that would be my oral amendment to the bill on line 2.3. Remove "and international." So there it would read: shooting sports facility for a sporting place, skeet American trap shooting, and then on as the bill is stated.
Okay. Representative Dill has an oral amendment, moves his oral amendment that on line 2.3 remove the words "and international." Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dill, what's the significance of American? I don't know that. What's
that's
the difference of American and just plain trap shooting?
In the bill, I proposed the amendment, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Osmond. American trap shooting, American trap, and international trap are two different sports. So maybe I'm listening to, as you just spoke, maybe we remove American and international and leave trap shooting.
Just leave trap shooting.
Right. That would make sense. Again, the wisdom of the experienced members. So I'd amend my amendment to remove American and international, and that would leave it to read sporting clays, skeet, and trap shooting.
Okay. Representative Dill incorporates an amendment to his amendment removing American as well as and international. Any discussion to the amendment as amended?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Dill.
We need to remove American and international. So it reads sporting clays, skeet, and trap shooting.
That's correct. And I was just explaining the amendment to the amendment first. But,
Make sure we're clear.
So any further discussion to the amendment? Again, the amendment, remove American and international on line 2.3. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And Representative McNamara, too.
I would stand for any questions, Mr. Chair, from the UR members.
Any further discussion or questions? Seeing none, I will, Representative McNamara renews his motion that House File 632, First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance and re-referred from there to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We are going to meet next again on Tuesday tomorrow. So until then, meeting is adjourned.
Mm-hmm.